Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we turn our attention to Apple computers, Apple products and developments. Lots of things that we can talk about today with Joe Rhodes, independent computer support specialist. He's based in Madison. Great to have him with us, and certainly thank you for listening in. You can join us with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Maybe you're a Mac fan, maybe you're not. Why or why not? Do you have an iPad or an iPhone? I have got an iPad. I have an iPhone. We have two iPads, actually, and an iPod and an iPhone. So we have all those things in our home. Problems you're having? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page and post there at The Larry Mueller Show. Joe, great to have you back.
It's great to be back.
OS 10.8.
Just came out 2 weeks ago.
Mountain Lion. What's new about it?
Well, there's a couple of interesting features. First off, Apple lowered the price again. I can't remember what 10.7 was. It was $30, and now 10.8 is $20. Apple seems to be steadily lowering the price. Pretty soon, they're going to be charging us a nickel.
Mm-hmm.
They've done a couple of things, some of which are minor tweaks to make it just a little bit easier to use. There have been a couple of headline features, though. On the usability front, you were talking about how you have a couple of iPhones and an iPad, mm-hmm. a couple of iPads and an iPod Touch. Now, you can get Apple's Pages, Keynote, and Numbers applications on those devices. And with iCloud, you can work on a document on one of your iPads, and it'll magically sync with the other iPad. Up to this point, it has not magically synced to your laptop or your desktop, your Mac. Well, now with 10.8, it does. And Apple really nailed it with this one. You can open up a Pages document on your Mac, be working on it, save it into iCloud, and then it'll pick right up where you left off on your iPad. You can set down on your iPhone, work on the same thing. All these changes propagate from one device to the other, and they've done a great job of making it really, really seamless. On the security front, they have added a feature called Gatekeeper.
Yeah, what does that do?
Gatekeeper basically only allows certain applications to run. And by default, there's several different settings that you can set it at. By default from Apple, it will ship with anything from the Apple Store will run just fine, the Mac App Store. And anything from a signed developer. So Apple will give developers a free certificate, and they can sign their application for free. Basically, it says, yes, we know where this came from. If you get some other piece of software, the Mac will warn you about it and not run it. Although you have the option to override that. So what this does is if somebody writes a virus or some malware or something like that, by default, this is not going to run unless you really make an effort to run it.
Okay.
And the default settings are such that it pretty much, you know, the average user is not going to be able to run something that isn't safe. They're really going to have to explore and figure out how to do it. So that's actually, I think, a big step forward in security. I think it's going to really tamp down the possibility of viruses before they get a foothold on the Mac. At least I hope it does.
Stephen O'Claire has a question for you. Steve, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I'm really appreciating this. I have a MacBook Pro
okay.
that I was employed by an out-of-state company. And I still have the computer. It's no longer theirs, but I am having a problem reconfiguring the Outlook for 2011 on it.
Okay.
It was working on a server what I'm trying to do is access my pop account with it, and I don't know how to do that.
Okay. Outlook is basically Microsoft's piece of software that lets you talk really nicely to an Exchange server. An Exchange server is what a company has that lets you share calendars and contacts, and of course it does email. So it works great in that environment. When you take it out of that environment, it works okay, but it's not fantastic. You'll find under the Tools menu of Outlook, there should be an option for Accounts. And probably the first thing you want to do is delete the old account because I'm assuming you no longer have access to it. I'm assuming that they turned that off on the server side. And then you should have the option of adding a new account.
Okay. Okay.
And I believe that Outlook does support POP. I'd be kind of surprised if it doesn't.
It does.
But let me just toss out an option to you, and I don't know if this is an option, but Apple's built-in mail client, in my humble opinion, works much better than Outlook. Outlook is new from the ground up with this version. It's a brand new program. Microsoft has come a long way, but it's still got some early version bugs in it and some instability. So if you're an Outlook fan and that's where you're most comfortable with, by all means, go ahead and give it a try and set it up. Otherwise, Apple has been massaging the built-in mail client of macOS 10 over all of the releases, and they've just done a fantastic job with it. Might not hurt to give that a shot as well.
And what is that called?
It's literally called Mail.
Mail,
and
okay.
If you look in your applications folder, it looks like a blue postage stamp with an eagle over the top of it.
Oh, so M-A-I-L.
M-A-I-L. Which makes it very hard when you're doing documentation because you have to describe the mail to get your mail.
Okay. So I have two questions for you then. Number one, if going back to the first one, if I were to delete the old account, is that going to delete all the information that's already on there?
Probably yes.
Okay. I need to back that up then.
Okay.
Okay. And then the second one is... since I still work in a business environment,
mm-hmm.
is it possible for this Mac client to interface with Outlook invitations, et cetera?
Yes.
Okay.
The if you get, for example, if you get a calendar invite via mail, it'll come in and it'll offer to put it onto Apple's calendar program, which is called iCal. In the newest version of macOS 10, it's no longer called iCal. Now it's just called Calendar.
Excellent.
All right.
Gee, you've been a big help. One last question, and then I'll move on.
Okay.
Will I be able on this Mac mail to use my my own domain?
Yes. If you have your own email domain, you'll have to know what the incoming and outgoing mail servers are and your username and password and all that. But, yeah, you can set it up for pretty much any email account.
There you go, Steve. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Kim in River Falls, hi to you.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I did something when I plugged my iPhone into my Mac,
mm-hmm.
and now every time I go to sync it, it wipes out anything new I have on there, on my phone.
Hmm. Did you, before this, did you have your phone synchronized to a different Mac?
Nope.
I'm not sure. Do changes that you make on your Mac synchronize back up to your iPhone?
I don't know. I don't know.
You haven't tried that.
I haven't. I don't know how to do it.
What is it wiping out exactly?
It wipes everything back to 2011, some certain date. I've got my phone. I don't have my computer right here, but I lost a ton of stuff. Well, I hadn't synced it for a while, and then I lost a ton of stuff, and I don't even have my phone with me, I guess.
Okay.
But it just, it clears it all out. It, you know, it doesn't...
Yeah, it sounds a little like it's either your iPhone got connected to a different Mac somehow, or it is restoring from a backup. So, like, it sounds like when you said it's from sometime in 2011, it sounds like that was the... last time your phone was backed up, and somehow iTunes is restoring it to that date.
That's what's happening.
Yeah, but it shouldn't do that unless you specifically ask it to restore. And without actually seeing what the error messages are that are going on, it's kind of hard to say.
My phone doesn't give me any error messages.
iTunes shouldn't do that all on its own, though. It's usually pretty good about asking you, hey, did you want to restore from a backup? Because... It'll warn you, hey, because if I do this, I'm going to wipe out, you know, the new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Is your Mac a portable?
Yes.
You might try taking that into the Apple Store and see if you can get that worked out, because I'm sure if somebody can get their hands on it and see exactly what's happening, they'll be able to go, oh, okay, here's where we are, and here's why it's doing this, and here's how we can get back to how it should operate.
And maybe even, do you think, any chance of restoring?
Well, that's just the thing. Apple is pretty careful about not... destroying data. They're really careful about, you know, warning you 18 times before they do anything that's going to wipe out data. So I wonder if there isn't maybe a backup hanging around somewhere that you have that maybe you're just not aware of.
That could be. I called them, and they checked something, and they said that things weren't backed up. But I didn't bring it into the store, so I'll just bring them both in. That's what I was going to do, and then I heard you guys on the radio, and I thought, oh, yay, save me a trip.
I would love to do it. It's one of those things that it's much more helpful if somebody can have this, see what's going on and have their hands on it.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Sure.
Yeah,
good
thanks,
luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We're talking Apple computers today and all the software with our guest, Joe Rhodes. Joe's an independent computer support specialist based in Madison. And I wanted to mention, again, to have you go to our Facebook page, at the Larry Mueller Show. You go to the page and take a look at the photography. And also there's a link to some other special places that you can go to, especially Jack Socha's site, and you're going to really appreciate the free information that he has on there. And we have some things relating to Mac computers as well. So lots of good things there. And Joe was going to be with us right up until 12:30 today. So stay tuned here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. I think a lot of folks wondered what impact Steve Jobs' death would have on Apple, but at least from the consumer perspective, it seems like Apple's as dynamic and entrepreneurial as it ever was.
Still chugging along. Well, there was a lot of things that were in the pipeline when Steve passed.
Yeah.
And so most of the experts were saying, you know, we might not even see what changes will occur until 2 or 3 years from now when Steve's ideas are no longer in the pipeline and other people's ideas had to fill that pipeline instead.
Yeah. Joe Rhodes, our guest, by the way. Joe, and those were his comments. And you're right. Could be still a knee-knocking time for the company.
Well, Steve was one of those rare human beings that just had a way of seeing into the future and seeing what people wanted before they knew. And it always amazed me when I'd get a new version of Mac OS X or a new Apple product, and they had solved a problem that I didn't know I was having, but all of a sudden I got the new version. I'm like, wow, this really solves a problem I didn't even know I was wasting time on. I've always been impressed with that. Interestingly, somebody broke into the Jobs house and didn't know where they were, stole a bunch of computers. Apparently, when they and some other personal effects, and when they turned these things on, they reported back to Apple where they were, and the police apprehended him. Guy had no idea whose house he'd broken into.
Oh.
Or at least not initially, he didn't know whose house he'd broken into.
But Steve, obviously, if anybody was going to use those computers, if they stole them, they were going to get caught.
Well, you know, the interesting part is that actually with iCloud, that's something we all have. You can set up iCloud, and they have a Find My Mac, Find My iPhone feature, where when they turn on, you can log into, if you've lost your phone, you can log into a web page and say, where is my phone? And it'll try and find your phone or your missing laptop or something like that. If it's not on, as soon as it turns on and checks in with Apple, Apple will send it a request to say, hey, where are you? And it'll send that information back to Apple, which then you see on a web browser and says, oh, here's the last known location of your Mac or your iPhone.
So an iPad, will it work for iPads
yep.
too?
Yep. Now, with things that don't have GPS chips in them, like my laptop does not have a GPS chip, it bases that off of Wi-Fi location. Wi-Fi, they can tell by which network you happen to be attached to. Of course, to get online, you use Wi-Fi most of the time. And Apple has a service that goes around and finds out where all the base stations are. And so they can give a general approximation of where you might be. So if someone were to steal my laptop, I could tell if it's in Madison or is it in Minneapolis or Chicago based on which Wi-Fi network it might have been on at that point.
Interesting. Mark in Waupun has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Mark.
Hi. There's a little bit of a myth that's still going around about Mac. I'm not a Mac user myself, but I know that the newer versions of OS X, you don't really have to worry about viruses or malware. But if you are using the newest version of OS X, and you're downloading torrents, you know, you should have antivirus, of course, right?
Well, you know, it's a fallacy to say there are no viruses for Mac or that it's immune to these things, because that's not the case. As a matter of fact, recently there was a flaw in Java, and Java is a programming language that comes from Sun, but it was included in Macs for the longest time. and there was a vulnerability in it. And you could, if you went to the correct web page that had some Java on it that was infected, you could actually pick up a virus. And there was quite a few Macs that got caught in that. And then Apple released a software update that would clean that out and then prevent that from happening in the future. So it's a bit of a fallacy to say that they're immune to that sort of thing. Now, what you just described, people, if they are downloading a lot of software, and especially if they're downloading software from less than reputable sources, mm-hmm. You are taking a grand risk, whether using a Mac, PC, or anything, because that is kind of dealing on the black market, and you don't know what you're going to get. It's like buying pharmaceuticals from a website that you don't know. You don't know what's going to be in them. So yes, you are taking quite a risk at that point, and if you are going to be downloading software or files or movies or music from some place that you don't know and trust, you should definitely have antivirus software or at least some ability to scan these files that you're downloading before you attempt to open them and use them, because it's very possible to inject a virus into something that looks like a music file. The one I've seen is there's a webpage that had videos on it, and they had a big banner that said, "Oh, you can't play this video until you install this codec. Click here to install the codec." And somebody said, "Well, I really want to watch these videos. I'm going to install this." Well, it turns out that was a virus, and there were no videos. And then they had the virus, and then we had to go and clean it off. So that sort of thing, technically, is that a virus? No, because it's not spreading on its own. It required you to do it, but it's still not helpful.
Yeah.
So, it's one of those things. If you're if you're getting stuff from the iTunes store or from Amazon or places like that, you're not going to get a virus from those places. They're pretty careful to make sure that everything on their services are clean. If you're getting it from someplace that you don't quite know or trust, it's a great idea to have antivirus software, or at the minimum, something that you can scan those particular files. And there's actually a freeware version out for a Mac called ClamXAV. There's an open source program called ClamAV, and then somebody made a version for Mac OS X, and you can install that. And the nice part about it is you can choose to just scan certain files. It's not going to protect your whole computer, but if you're downloading some things that you think might be risky, you can use that and scan them before you use them.
Perfect. Thanks a lot for calling, Mark. Appreciate it. Heidi in Livingston. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Joel and Larry. I have a desktop iMac, and it's about 7 or 8 years old, and it's getting a horizontal blue line intermittently, and I'm wondering if this is the death knell of my computer.
Not a good sign.
It is not a good sign. iMacs of that era were kind of known for doing things like that, and actually I was just at a client site the other day where the gentleman had that same situation. It kind of comes and goes. Usually when the computer gets warmer, it's more likely to do that. And unfortunately, there's not a good fix for that because the video chips were built into the whole motherboard. And so the fix is to replace the motherboard. But at that point, with a computer 6 or 7 years old, it just isn't worth the price. And
that's what I'm reading, and it's giving me like 6 months or something like that.
Here's the thing. It's going to probably come and go, and it'll get progressively worse. And, you keep using that Mac as long as you are still happy looking at it.
Because I love it. Okay.
Well, and the nice part is that the data on the hard drive is not affected by this. Now, I'm not saying your hard drive won't fail, but what I'm saying is what's going on with the screen is separate from the health of your hard drive. So even if this were to completely blank out and the screen just went completely unreadable, if you were to get a new Mac, you can still pull the data from your old Mac. So it's not an exigency that you go and replace this. Having said that, I will encourage you to have a backup because that's always good practice.
Yep.
Okay. And I'm wondering also, this line, it never goes across the whole monitor. It's just when I'm on email or a web page. Mm-hmm. That's still the same problem?
Yeah. It's the video card itself is starting to, they've got some chips that draw everything on the screen, and somewhere there they're trying to add a 1 and a 0 together, and they're getting a ugly result.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. That's probably what I thought was going to happen.
Okay. Sorry.
Thanks, Heidi. Thanks for calling. Bill in Madison. Hello.
Hello. I apologize for quality. I'm talking to you from my car. I have a question about the new Apple Mail program you were just mentioning earlier, a few callers ago. I'm in a situation where I'm having, I go back and forth between PCs and Macs. I use both.
Okay.
And I use for my current email client, Mozilla Thunderbird.
Okay.
I won't use Outlook because of its proprietary PST files.
Right.
That's how it stores all its, you know, the email data and whatnot. I use Thunderbird because it uses the MBX, you know, format, which is a more or less of a, you know, a, a standard that was established, you know, years ago. And the thing I will worry about with Apple is that they're also notorious for proprietary type stuff. I guess if I was to get does that program store its email in MBX format or something else that's fairly standard, or is it some Apple proprietary file?
I think it is a standard that Apple has tweaked. So I don't think you're going to be able to pick up the Apple Mail database and throw it at Thunderbird and expect it to import it cleanly.
That's what I was wondering about.
Yeah. They, in favor of having good backup and search mechanisms, they break, instead of having everything in a single file, they put it in a folder where each message is an individual file. And then Mail can, you know, back up a single message, can restore a single message, it can search these things real easy. But I think what you're talking about, the mailbox format that Thunderbird uses, is a single file.
Well, it's cross-platform compatible,
right,
is the neat thing about it.
Right.
Now, the other thing I was curious about is, I have several email accounts. I have a couple POP accounts. I have a couple of HTML accounts. And I also have a couple of IMAP accounts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does the Apple program support IMAP?
Yes, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I was just going to go there. The reason that this issue has sort of faded into the background is because all of the decent mail providers and you know, such as the commercial ones, at least for like Google and places like that, they all will give you IMAP access. And with IMAP access, you don't have to worry about picking the mail database up from one computer to the next, because
right,
the mail database is all stored on the server.
It all stays on the server.
Right.
But I don't have that option. There's a couple of
accounts
I still have to have that are POP only, and you know, it becomes problematic.
Yeah.
But as far as you know, at least it supports IMAP.
Yes, absolutely supports IMAP. I all of my email accounts are all IMAP. Which makes it really nice because you can swap between your iPhone, your iPad, your Mac, a PC, and everything follows you.
Okay. Well, that answers my question quite neatly. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. That is handy, isn't it?
IMAP is a great feature. It really is.
We had an email from Debbie. My son has an iPhone that he has synced with his girlfriend's PC, but they are no longer together.
Uh-oh.
So he has not updated or synced to another computer because he's afraid of losing his contacts, his music, and photos. If he uses another PC to sync, will he lose all his data?
That is a possibility, but again, the Mac will warn you about it. First thing I would do is hop on Google and do a little research here, because you should be able to synchronize that with a new computer. You'll need your Apple ID. And among other things, it should offer to download purchased music from the iPod that you purchase with your Apple ID down to that Mac. And I believe it will also then download your calendars, contacts, etc. The other possibility is if the software is running iOS 5 or later, you could also switch to an iCloud backup, where instead of syncing to a PC, it syncs up to Apple's iCloud.
Yeah.
In that respect, then you don't even need a PC anymore. But of course, if you're running an older version of iOS, you need a Mac or a PC to upgrade it first before
right.
you can use iCloud. But your best bet, do a little bit of research before you plug it in, and then follow the prompts. But yes, you should be able to synchronize certainly your personal data to a new Mac.
And Facebook question from Gwen, recently purchased a new MacBook Pro Retina display. Now her Adobe Photoshop CS4 crashes whenever she tries to move layers in the layers palette. Is there something she can do to fix this problem? She's read numerous forums, and while others are experiencing this problem too, there doesn't seem to be an answer. I can't afford to upgrade to CS5.
You know, unfortunately, Gwen, I don't know if I'm going to have a magic answer here for you. Officially, Adobe just doesn't support CS4 on these newer operating systems. And with the MacBook Pro with a new Retina display, Apple has changed so much fundamentally on the hardware side that I think you're going to have a tough time convincing Adobe to upgrade a program they're not selling anymore to handle this new software. Adobe, Quark, a lot of manufacturers, they just don't try to keep the older versions updated with the newest hardware. And yeah, as much as I hate to say it, I think looking at CS5 or even CS6 might be the official way to fix that.
Another Facebook question. This is a good one from Kathy here. We've been talking about iCloud and so forth, but she wants to know if you could give an overview of iCloud and how it actually works.
That's a really good question, because a lot of times we get caught in the details of this and we don't understand, well, what is the big picture?
Yeah.
So once upon a time, we had our Mac and we put contacts and we had our calendars and they lived on our Mac. And then if we had a second computer, we had to come up with some method of getting these things from one computer to the other. And then iPods came along, and it made perfect sense that we had all our music on our Macs, so we would just sync our iPods to our Mac. And that worked great. Until you get a second iPod or an iPad, and then you get a second Mac, and then all of a sudden, the center of our universe is no longer our computer, but it could be floating around between four or five different devices. You know, Larry, you were talking about all the different iPads, iPhones, and iPod Touches you have. Now, you know, who's to say which one of those is the central focus for you? So what Apple did is they said, hey, rather than make your Mac or your PC the center focus where everything synchronizes to, we're going to handle that up on our side on the server, up in the what they call the cloud, which is basically a nice way of saying the internet. So now, instead of when I put a calendar entry in my Mac, instead of just that being the official place it stays, it goes up through the internet, and the official place that it lives is up on Apple's server in iCloud. And then my phone, which is also hooked to the internet to my iCloud account, sees that new calendar entry that I put in on my Mac, and then it gets downloaded to my phone. So that, in a nutshell, is what Apple is doing with iCloud. They're basically making this central storage facility that's up in the internet, and then any of your Apple devices that can get to the internet can have access to the central storage.
Yeah, that's great.
And it's very flexible. So you can put calendar entries in there. You can put contacts. You can put Pages documents. You can put Numbers documents. You can do the iWork documents. They even have an ability where you can do music, and I think they call it iTunes in the cloud or something like that, where you can purchase an iTunes song on your Mac, and then you can have it automatically download to your iPhone and your iPad as well. And the way Apple does all this is they key it to a user account. So you have a username and a password. And as soon as you log in with that username and password, all of that data that is associated with you gets replicated on all of your devices. Yeah. And the genius of Apple is they made it all really easy and really something you don't have to think about.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it.
It really is.
Dennis in Spring Green, hello. Thank you for calling.
Oh, yeah. Hi, Larry. Hi, Joe. Thank you. I had a quick question, I hope. Mm-hmm. I live rurally where we don't have high-speed dial-up. I'm on dial-up, rather.
Okay.
I upgraded to the last operating system, which afterwards I found out it didn't support an external modem. I'm wondering, does this new system support an external modem?
Boy, I don't know. I'm surprised to hear it doesn't support an external modem. I'm kind of surprised by that.
Well, I guess there was a couple of places that one could go to, and you can jerry-rig and finagle, but I'm just not into the technology that much.
Sure, sure.
But, yeah, afterwards, with problems I had when I finally called Apple Support, they said, oops, yeah, we didn't let you know that it doesn't support even their own external modem. So
I was just going to ask if it was I know Apple has an external USB modem, but I didn't know they weren't supporting that in 10.8. That's kind of a surprise.
Yeah. So, okay. Thought I'd just check with you.
Yeah. Thanks for the note. I actually might need to research that. That's new.
Oh. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Apple, glad I could help out.
Yeah. Thanks,
sorry.
Dennis. Yeah.
Apple likes to. They really like to move forward, and sometimes they leave behind old technology, and they don't tell you about it until you all of a sudden get it. Go. Wait a minute. That's not there anymore.
Shez in Madison. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I just got a new MacBook Air. I love it. I got it in January, and I was a previous PC user.
Okay.
And I had two separate questions regarding my Mac. The first one is, I remember with my PC, I used to have to do some maintenance on it, like defragmentation and deleting my cookies.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if I need to do anything like that for my Mac.
Nope. All you have to do is follow the software updates when they come up. And that's pretty much the extent of it. No, Mac OS X, it kind of, the defragging the hard drive, it handles that on its own in the background all the time, so you don't really have to worry about it. And the MacBook Airs with solid-state drives actually don't care if the hard drive gets fragmented because it doesn't really affect their performance. And as far as cookies go, cookies get kind of a maligned reputation, and for the most part, they're fairly innocuous. It's basically a way of, you know, when you go into, say, you know, Amazon.com, how does Amazon know who you are the next time you visit their website? Well, they give you a cookie, and when you go back to their website, you hand that cookie back to Amazon and goes, oh, well, this is Shez. Okay, well, here you are. So it doesn't really slow the computer down any. Some people just get nervous.
I was under the impression that it did with a PC, and that's why I had to do that.
I can't speak definitively on the PC side of things, but it shouldn't. I've never noticed it do so on a Mac.
Oh, okay. Well, that's great. My other question is, for my job, I'm in sales, and my company uses Microsoft Streets and Trips.
Okay.
To plug in a bunch of addresses and figure out the best route.
Sure.
And I haven't been able to find a comparable program that Mac offers. Do you know if they're working on one, or is there one that I just haven't found yet?
I have not heard of one, and I've heard of Streets and Trips kind of offhandedly. I knew a person who used it, but I don't know if there's anything comparable for the Mac or not.
All right.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Sorry.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Dan wonders, is there an app like My Docs so I can file docs on my iPad?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what My Docs is. So I don't know about the, of course, the iPad and the iPhones, they don't have any concept of file system. And Apple did that on purpose. They didn't want people to have folders and subfolders and organize things. Probably the closest would be iCloud, where when you open up a Pages application on your iPad, you see all of the Pages documents that you've created so far. And then, of course, you have that same thing on your Mac with your running 10.8. When you open Pages there, you see all of the Pages document that are in iCloud. And, of course, they all synchronize. That's probably the closest thing that I've seen to that.
Okay.
I know there are third-party apps that will let you browse a server. So if you have files on a server and you want to see what they are, but it doesn't really let you edit any of that stuff. Dropbox, I think, sort of does that. But, honestly, I've never used it.
And in 30 seconds, Sally wonders, they've got two iPhones, a new MacBook, desktop Mac, syncs the iPhone and my husband's iPhone and the laptop and desktop get synced through iCloud, but I don't want to share all my information with his and vice versa. What do we do?
The simplest thing is to create a second iCloud account so that you're not synchronizing all to the same bucket. If you have one username and password, everything goes to that bucket. Makes perfect sense with a single individual. If you have two people or three people, and you don't want these things to cross over, just create a separate iCloud account, and then your calendar will be separate from his calendar and vice versa.
That makes good sense. Thank you so much, Joe. Appreciate it very much. You'll come back and be with us.
Absolutely.
Again, Joe Rhodes, our guest today. And your website?
Is joerhodes.com.
And it's Rhodes is spelled R-H-O-D-E-S.
Yeah, ironically like the scholar.
Well, you are one. Thanks, Joe. Joe will be back. JoeRhodes.com. That's his site. And we have a link to it on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show as well. Tomorrow, Garden Talk, Neil DeBole of Prairie Nursery joins us. Stay with us. Lots in store.